views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some really groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, I'm so lucky that I get to sit down with some really incredible experts on organizational culture to help us understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I'm really excited to have Hugh McGill here with us to talk about how to move a company from silos to safety to satisfaction. And this perspective on our larger organizational cultures can help us more easily understand how we can really create brilliant organizations and what might hold us back from that. So let me introduce Hugh. Hugh McGill is an operations consultant and coach with a passion for and significant experience in molding organizational cultures that bring out the potential of all members of a business and engage employees in personal growth and learning. He has achieved sustainable results through working with leaders in relationship building and clarity of purpose. He is a Lean Six Sigma Green Belt who implements strategies and activities to strengthen processes and competencies in organizations. Hugh's primary talents are leadership development, change management, and culture shaping. His career growth and experience have taken him through manufacturing and human resource leadership positions in the pharmaceutical, medical device, food, and paper industries. He has taught in leadership graduate programs at Northeastern University and Cambridge College here in Boston. When he is not working, he enjoys playing soccer, listening to jazz, and photography. Welcome, Hugh.
Thank you, Claudette. So I'm really happy to be sitting down and talking with you about the journey that I've been on for the last few years.
Oh, I'm so glad. We've had a few conversations and they've been really, really inspirational. So I'm glad that we get to share some of this with the listeners who are people listening to the show or might listen to the show later.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I know one thing that we wanted to start with was having you share some of the story about, you know, set the stage for people who are listening in, you know, about how you went from moving a global pharmaceutical company with a more traditional siloed kind of organizational structure into something that was completely different. How did that look? How did that story start?
Okay, well, I joined the organization in 2008 at a time when they had decided that it was going to become a process-centric organization. Let me explain what that is. So the goal within a process-centric organization is really to have minimal handoffs, have multi-skilled teams that really allow for decision-making accountabilities and responsibilities within the team, and then alignment of responsibilities through the whole team. For example, a siloed organization, you know, you have one department, engineering is a department, quality is a department, manufacturing is a department, planning is a department. And if you need help, you are really physically going to those departments and asking for help. And, you know, I think in some organizations, I'm not sure, are the goals aligned? Are the goals of engineering the same as the goals of manufacturing? It's the same as the goals of quality? Well, the thing about a process-centric organization, it really allows everybody in the organization to have very clear goals. Everybody is going after the same thing, and it's all related to ensuring that the customer, and in my case, the patient, has high-quality products when they need it. And that was very much the goal of achieving that. prior to, you know, myself joining there, the organization spent some time doing teaching people about demand-driven supply, helping them understand lean principles, which are very much a component of this. You know, when I say lean principles, it's, you know, right from me, standard ways of working, creating a continuous improvement environment, consistent process, empowering people to make decisions, and then really helping them understand what the visual factory is, what it looks like, what it feels like, and then identifying members of process execution teams that are going to be able to accomplish this.
Absolutely. And I know when one of the things that you had shared was that it was this process was a lot about helping employees understand, like, you know, how to get to the root cause of things, right? Problem solve differently, start to connect and relate to each other in different ways.
Yeah, they're very much the sort of the initial conversations that took place up front were very much, what does a team look like? How does it work? You know, how do you create a much closer, more aligned group of people who can work with each other and help each other? So they developed process execution teams. Now, a process execution team was the teams that I was on two teams as a coach. So my role very much in these teams was to help people recognize what are they doing to achieve the goals of the organization. What are, you know, what are the behaviors that leaders need? What are the competencies we need within the teams? So I was very much sort of bouncing backwards and forwards between both teams, so to really help them, you know, engage themselves in, you know, in best practices of how to behave. So a process execution team was really made up of a ring. That is the facilitators of the production group, the maintenance facilitator of the mechanics, the engineering group, the quality group, planning, were all on one team reporting to a PET lead who was very much, so he was in charge and his decisions. And so that group were the ones that were making sure that communication was going down into through the organization, through the team. On a daily basis, they were wandering through the production areas or where the work gets done, you know, in lean terms, the Gemba, and really talking with people, looking at the day's results, what's happened. What were the three biggest losses? What actions are we taking against them? And really talking with operators and asking them, what's going on? What's getting in the way? So there was very much sort of communicating within the team that everybody's voice was very important, that everybody's voice and thoughts were really significant and needed to be heard, that problems needed to be visible. And, you know, we weren't going to shoot anybody because of problems. We were going to really understand them and learn from them. You know, so very much it was about engaging people on a daily basis as to what's happened in the last 24 hours. Making visible results, putting a board. There were boards up in the area that really showed, you know, this is what how we did against target, a run for target. This is what maintenance we have to do. This is the sources of loss. And having visible signals within the team as to whether we were on target or not. You know, there was a green flag. One of the facilitators came up with flags. So we had a green flag sat next to every single production line. When it was when things were working well, it was green. When things weren't working well, it was yellow. When things were not going, when we were missing targets, they were going red. So, but these teams really wanted green flags. So they were really, you know, proactive. The moment that flag started to go towards yellow, they'd be calling maintenance, come on in, let's see, what have we got, what's the problem, what's getting in our way. So very, very much sort of getting engaged and recognizing that they had the power to do stuff themselves. So it was really sort of flattening the organization. It was flattening the group within the teams to really, to help everybody understand the scope and the scale of the issues. But it wasn't somebody else's problem. It was the team's problem. And quality, traditionally in organizations, that have traditional silos, you go knock on quality's door when there's a problem.
Right.
Right, we got a problem. Well, in this environment, quality and manufacturing were working in true partnership where, they would both see the good and the bad and ask each other for help. It was wonderful to see. And one of the things about creating a new environment, new organization, is there were new people in new roles. So they were examining, they were coming very humble about what knowledge they brought, and really being very open to learn how does a production line run, what's really going on an hourly basis on a production line, rather than let me know when there's a problem. It was really exciting, and wonderful relationships were being created within the team with those daily walkthroughs, and really just respecting what wisdom there was on the front line, talking to people where the work was getting done, as to what were the obstacles, what was getting in the way, and really helping. And I'll talk about the leaders in a bit, but it's sort of helping people think through problem solving, think through root cause analysis. We did a lot of training around root cause analysis, the fishbone. We got everybody on the team involved in learning about the fishbone, the five whys. So against every production line, we had a fishbone up on the wall. So if there was a problem, they could just go right to the fishbone and do the root cause analysis there and then. They didn't need permission to do that. It was really magical when you'd see a group of operators and a maintenance guy just standing around a board, just talking through a problem, trying to figure it out, trying to get to the cause.
It sounds so magical. On that note, we're actually going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to keep talking about this. Like you said, the magic that got created, the emotional intelligence that emerged, and as you alluded to, really talking about how the leaders needed to be aligned. So you're listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to continue this really interesting conversation. Stay tuned.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-9000. 972-5366.
Are you looking for the perfect setting for your next workshop or retreat? At Spirit Fire Meditative Retreat Center, cultivating consciousness is what we do best. Our guests count on us to create an atmosphere that supports serenity and well-being. We lead from the heart and create space for the mind. Freshly prepared meals designed with local and organic ingredients, 95 acres of beautiful woods and pastures, and a facility built with green in mind. This is what you'll find at Spirit Fire. For more information, visit SpiritFireRetreatCenter.com.
Do you ever feel as if you're working twice as hard but only getting half as far? Are you trying to connect with your path in life and finding it elusive? Mainstream Metaphysics Radio is a weekly call-in show where we harness our connection with the universe and use what is in our power to affect change for optimal success and happiness. This hit show bridges the divide between what is and what we do not know. Eve, named one of the country's top psychics, also known as the MBA psychic, invites you on this journey for this live call-in show with readings, featured guests, leaders, and visionaries in both business and spiritual callings. So join Eve Thursdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com as she takes metaphysics mainstream. For more information about Eve, visit EliteTarot.com. That's EliteTarot.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, my guest today is Hugh McGill. Hugh is an operations coaching consultant, and we have been talking about a global pharmaceutical company with a supply site in Massachusetts that whose culture he really helped transform. So it's been really, really interesting to learn about one company's experience taking their culture from a more traditional siloed organization into a much flatter employee and customer focused entity and structure. So, Hugh, we were just talking about some of the magic that really got created as frontline employees got much more empowered to solve problems right at the root cause, right? Relationships got formed. You were talking about the wisdom they were able to share. And then it also sounded like there was a lot of emotional intelligence that started to emerge, that people learned a lot about that. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, it was, from a leadership perspective, it was, the motto for the leaders was make every interaction count.
Mm-hmm.
That every interaction that you're going to have with the people within the organization has got to count, has got to be a positive thing, it needs to be positive. You need to be really, communications need to be timely. You've got to make the time for those conversations. They need to be face-to-face, clear and consistent communication, open and honest. There was a Harvard Business Review article several years ago called, Leadership as Management as a Conversation, Leadership as a Conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about creating more of a level playing field, but we're all human beings. We all want to get the same thing done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, respecting that, whether you're a manager or whether you're a line operator or a quality inspector, you're just as smart as each other. You might have different qualifications, but you still have a great desire for success, for the organization to be successful. And it's really creating that sort of relationship within between leaders and between the rest of the team to be able to do that. We were very fortunate. We had a senior leadership that was really involved and fully committed to the vision of the organization, which was really creating a self-driven, continuous improvement mindset within the organization with highly talented operators, highly talented individuals within. So we have a senior leadership that really truly believed in that. And they believed it was very much around trust, building trust in the organization, and modeling behaviors that were indicative and demonstrated where we wanted to get to in the journey.
How did they build trust? How did the leaders build trust? I'm curious.
Well, I'll tell you, it was fascinating. This was a time when, during the time we were downsizing as an organization. When I got to the organization, there were somewhere around 800 employees there. When I left the organization, there were about 150. So there was incredible turmoil from a perspective of contracts ending. You know, obviously in the pharmaceutical industry, there's generic, some products go generic all of a sudden, you just lost that business. So there was a lot of different things going on. And I think one of the things that the leadership did very clearly right up front is they told people what could be.
Mm-hmm.
Not would be, but what could be.
Mm-hmm.
They told people that potentially in 12 months, you know, some people are going to lose their jobs. You know, and, you know, there was a great conversation in operations. Should we be telling people this? It was really, there was a belief that you had to be honest with people about what was going on, and they would respect it. That at least they'd know, you know, they say that an entrepreneur is in a better position than somebody who works for a corporation, because entrepreneurs can see it coming. Many
right.
people in organizations, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, okay, sorry. I think what we tried to do was just be very clear to people is this is what we know. This is what could be. We don't know if it's definitely going to be, but this is what could be. So we tried to ensure that all our operators and all the people in the organization knew what was going on. And that, you know, to a certain extent really helped us engage them in developing new competencies and new skills, because obviously from a marketable perspective, they wanted to make sure they were stronger as individuals as well. But I think, you know, I think the first time that you really felt it was all of a sudden the product we made, which was not a generic product, one of the generic companies released it to the marketplace.
Mm.
And so all of a sudden, you know, sales and people were, you know, we had too many people in the site. And so quickly we went to certain employees, you know, through a selection process, and they were let go by the company.
Mm-hmm.
There was an uproar. People
yeah.
said, well, you know, you're saying you've been honest. You're saying you've been, this wasn't honest.
Mm-hmm.
And that week, the site manager had a site meeting and was literally in tears in front of the entire site, talking about honesty and trust, and apologized and assured people that would not happen again.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, very emotional meeting.
Mm.
But I think at that point, leadership really created a connection through the organization that we wanted to be open and honest. We wanted to build people. We wanted to ask questions. We wanted to create partnerships.
And it was so authentic to have that sort of a meeting with that level of apology.
Authentic.
Yeah.
It's very, I mean, talk about emotional, you know, you read about emotional intelligence and people tell you, oh, yeah, yeah, it happens in our organization. But to absolutely see it, and to really feel the empathy that he was feeling for not just the people that left, but the insecurity that it provided the other people in the organization.
Right.
But he knew that was not going to create power.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fascinating thing to see. And it really allowed us, and I think it really sort of brought clarity that this was a journey we were on as an organization. This wasn't flavor of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Where we were going to go together, and we were going to work together, and we were going to help people get, you know, one of the great things was that the leadership was very visible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they went out to the production area, they went out into the different administration areas, and really talked to people and really connected with them. You know, the theory of open door management, leaders,
mm-hmm.
You know, my door is always open. It doesn't work.
Right. You need to go out to people. Right. You need to leave your office.
You know, the leaders, yeah, because it's so important that they go see. They go mm-hmm. discuss stuff with people. They help resolve issues. They listen. They help them manage, you know, sort of with the problem-solving aspects of it, help them get to the root cause. You know, the leaders were really pushing the decision-making down into the organization. It was very, very powerful to see.
And you said to me once that the leaders worked on, and you helped them with this, leaving people in a state of what you called learning rather than defensiveness. And I really loved that phrasing.
Yeah.
And how were they able to do that? How were they able to leave people in a place of learning?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, I don't know if we had unique leaders. I think we had individuals that really saw the vision of the organization and really understood through dialogues, leader dialogues that we'd have to talk about where we're trying to get to, the feedback we were getting through skip level dialogues that the team leader would have with skipping at one level and then meeting with other people to talk about what's going on. I think the leaders just really understood what they needed to do to get this to work because mm-hmm. they saw the power in it. They saw quality improving. They saw the results within the organization getting better. They saw that there was just a strong partnership, that the more they could build a strong partnership. We went through training of, you know, leading through change, helping mm-hmm. people understand, you know, helping the leaders understand how do you lead transition? How do you lead change? It's not just a matter of saying, hey, change happens, get with the program.
Right, but exactly.
You know, it's really recognizing where people are, each individual is within their group. One of the leaders, you know, the challenge for many leaders is that by the time change happens, they're already at the other end of the curve.
Right, and everyone else is still trying to catch up.
They've been through mm-hmm. the plan, and they're mm-hmm. already there. And I think it was great. At one of the sessions, one of the facilitators said, you know, it's like stepping out of a mine. You've got to turn around and you've got to give your hand to the people who are halfway up the curve. You've got to give them a hand and help them up and get them so that they can get comfortable with new beginnings, which I thought was just a wonderful picture of for all the leaders who were in the room who we were talking with about leading through change, to help them recognize what their role was within it. You know, very much about sort of really helping them understand that it was about, you know, sort of, it wasn't just about the what needed to get accomplished. That is, you know, we needed to continue our license to operate. We needed to continue deviation reduction. We needed to develop new blended roles in the organization and new skills. A lot of it was about how do we do it?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do it? And that's very much about listening. It's really about helping people resolve problems. It's just clearer communication with people. It's being honest and open. And if you don't know, say you don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will, you know, we'll dive right into this, what you started to talk about, you know, how what was the plan for people to move forward, right? You know, the honesty, the listening, the resolving. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. When we come back, Hugh McGill and I will continue talking about this really interesting story of cultural transformation in a pharmaceutical company. Stay tuned.
Discover the healing medicine from the giant monkey tree frog Cambo. Cambo practitioner Ginny Rutherford and professional psychic Todd Rolson have come together for lively discussions of alternative healing medicines from the Amazon. Ginny and Todd bring you Cambo Talk Radio, Tune in each Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific to hear from guests all over the world with real life stories and the medicinal benefits of Cambo. For more information, visit CamboKiss.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good, and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
Everybody, we're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, my guest today is Hugh McGill. And we have been talking about how to transform and reshape the culture of a global pharmaceutical company. Hugh worked at a particular supply site in Massachusetts and worked on really reshaping that culture. So for those of you just joining us, this is a good point to stop in, because Hugh and I were just starting to talk about how he worked with employees to help them figure out where they were going and how they were going to get there, right, Hugh? You started to talk about listening,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, it's really engaging people. You know, when you go to a lean environment, you know, the last thing you want to tell people is that you're going to a lean environment and that you're going to, you know, this is about standard ways of working, cutting non-value-added work, because people get very nervous about that sort of thought. So it was very much about engaging people in what was the vision of the organization. So now when we first started talking, we talked about lean principles, you know, the sort of really, you know, what does that mean? Sort of right for me, standard ways of working, continuous improvement, sort of really engaging people in how do they sort of come to a state of mind where, you know, right for me, it's always right for me, problems can be recognized and resolved as a source. You know, and I think, you know, when I got to the organization, then nobody knew very much about what process execution teams were. Heaven forbid, nobody knew what a coach was actually go out there and be a coach. You know, I sort of went out and, you know, my boss said to me, well, you do understand you're going to have to spend a lot of time in the workplace as opposed to in your office. I'm like, I love it. Yes, exactly.
Yes,
That's what we need to do, because it's engaging and talking with people and seeing who they are, learning about the skills, learning about their competencies. So I think what we did from sort of the lean principles, when you talk about right for me, it's also about solving problems and not living with problems.
Mm-hmm.
you know, one of the things that most production operations have is very much a mentality of keep the line running, whatever you've got to do, keep mm-hmm. the line running. And so all of a sudden, you know, within this lean environment, the facilitators would be, you know, they'd be begrudgingly saying, okay, if there's a problem, shut the line down. And, you know, the operators would look at them and say, well, you've always told us just to keep it going, get product out. And I think for about a year and a half, there was this real reluctance by people to shut the lines down. That mm-hmm. this unit, that every, you know, 40 minutes or so, something would happen, they'd have to shut it down, clean it out. And they were really efficient at cleaning this equipment out. You know, it would only be down for 3 minutes or 2 minutes. And it's like, got that back up and running, and it would run again for another 45 minutes, and it would go down again. And you'd be saying to them, okay, so it's happened 3 times now in the space of 2.5 hours. Shut the line down.
Mm-hmm.
Get maintenance over there. Do a root cause on it. And at first, you know, you said earlier about how did we create the magic? It took a while. Mm-hmm. It took a while of reinforcing what we were trying to accomplish. Because traditionally the organization had recognized the heroes, heroic behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's good recognition. And now what we were trying to do is we didn't want to recognize the heroes. We wanted to very much, you know, recognize the people that were doing the important work, the important stuff. And so we had a PT lead who came on assignment for a few months because one of the PT leads was sick. And then he came back 3 years later. He said 3 years later, he couldn't believe how quick people would shut the line down. Because when he was there, and we were about a year and a half into the program, mm-hmm. people weren't willing to do it.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, when finally somebody said, you know what, I'm shutting it down, let's bring so-and-so over. You know, we went out there, the whole leadership team went out there and gave this individual a round of applause. It completely embarrassed them. But it was like, yes, what great, that's exactly what we want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happened is we went in, we did the root cause, they made the adjustments fully, not just a quick clean out, and the line ran for, you know, I wouldn't say it ran endlessly. This was old equipment, but at mm-hmm. least it ran for 2 or 3 days without the breakdown again.
Wow.
And it was really recognizing, and it was being able to go back to people and recognizing and respecting what wisdom they had
mm-hmm.
and that we respected it. It wasn't about, you know, you tell me what needs to get done, and if I believe you, I will do it. It was, you know, like really listening and really understanding. It was also helping people understand what their job was.
Mm-hmm.
How did they support the team? What was their, and did they have the skills to do that? So we had a competency matrix. We developed a competency matrix at each team, which really defined these are the things that people need to be able to do. And sort of really looked at the whole team and what's our capacity, and are we able to do it? And really defined on-the-job training with certified subject matter experts to work with these individuals to get them to a new level of competency so they could become more confident in the work that they were doing. I think what you find in a lot of teams is, you know, traditionally you go to 5 or 6 people. If it's a team of 20, there's probably 5 or 6 people that are experts in everything.
Right,
and
right.
The rest are pretty good at other stuff. We were very, very committed to have 20 people who are experts, the 20 mm-hmm. people that could step in and do it. So did it happen? Not 100%. But in many cases, it was really engaging people in in learning those skills and learning those competencies and having them do it.
The phrase that keeps sticking in my head that you mentioned a few minutes ago was respecting the wisdom.
The wisdom
of people. Yeah, and how often that doesn't happen, and it must have been striking that it did happen, the people's wisdom was respected. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I was in my bank yesterday, and, one of these rare, I'll actually go into the building.
Right.
And there was a lot of activity. There was five or six people behind the counter, and I was talking with one of the customer service people. And I said, so that's exciting. That's interesting. You got lots of people there. They said, yeah, what we're trying to do is we're trying to define a process. And rather than management at our Cambridge office doing it, they've decided that the people that actually do the process need to define it and design it. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful to see.
Because
you could see the sparkle in their eyes because they were so, you could see they felt good being asked.
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. It's logical that they would be the ones to do the process, define it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was what was going on. This was very much what was happening, that our leaders were going back to people and engaging them in solving problems. I mean, we did a lot of training. We did a lot of work with them. And it was more about learning and education rather than training, actual training workshops.
Mm-hmm.
But we did do some culture shaping workshops with the full site. We, in January during shutdown, when all the maintenance was being done, we had cross-functional full-day workshops for people for the site from different departments. So we'd engage different groups talking to other people through the site. We challenged everybody to learn each other's name over the next year instead of just waving each other in the hallway,
mm-hmm.
to really
mm-hmm.
recognize who you're talking to, who is this person and what do they do. And one of the exercises we did was very much about, we put a, and this came out of GoalQPC many years, where, they have these little memory joggers, little handbooks.
Oh, right.
One of the exercises they had was about creating a news story 20 years ahead,
mm-hmm.
Or 15 years ahead, and then asking people to say, okay, so what did we do to get that? So we did that, and basically, site of the organization, the benchmark for the organization, best practices, quality improvement, best quality results. We gave them the whole spread. And then we went back to groups at these workshops and said, okay, so what is it we need to do to accomplish that? What did we do to accomplish that 2018 news article? What are the behaviors we needed to display as individuals? What as teams, as leaders? What are the skills and the competencies that we needed to do? And we really engage people in the conversation of what should this organization be like to be in? That we're going to come to this organization on a daily basis. What is going to make this an organization that where we can grow, where we can learn more stuff, where we can share our knowledge, where we can achieve results, where we can, make sure that our customers are fully satisfied. And over a 4-year period, we went sort of in the pharmaceutical world, first class batches. That is a batch that's got no problems. 2012, around 79%. 2015, 90%. Were first class batches.
Wow! Congratulations. That was huge.
Yeah, because it's not, because engagement for the sake of engagement
doesn't really work,
doesn't do
right?
You a lot of good. It's the results that you're going to achieve through doing that. Repeat deviations in 2012, 33 repeat deviations. 2015, 5. And this was people really using the skills and us allowing them to engage in root cause analysis, come up with solutions, come up with actions, share what they came out of the root cause sessions with others in the team, seen? Did we get it right? What do you think? Keeping people well informed as to what was going on.
It's truly made a difference, and we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, love to hear more about how it made a difference. And it seems also like it's a great segue into starting to share some recommendations and words of wisdom, which you've been doing throughout this entire our entire conversation here. But we'll narrow them down a little more specifically. You're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Plus live your purpose equals joy. That's the motto of Unstuck Joy with Vicki Todd. Vicki believes you were born with gifts that are meant to make the world brighter. Each show will feature an art visioning journal prompt to help you create your way to soul clarity. If you're ready to get unstuck and create more joy, this show is for you. Tune in every month on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit VickiWorldArt.com.
You, yes you, can be the highest version of yourself. Wellness coach and natural beauty expert Dr. Agnes Frankel is on a mission to help you play the game of your life. Win in vibrancy, health, and beauty. Because you deserve it. Dr. Agnes goes beyond the limits in her personal coaching sessions to revolutionize health and wellness. Now is the time to unleash your true power. For more information, visit dragnesfrankel.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Curious about the meaning of life? Do you want to deepen your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. The school also organizes group meditations each year to benefit humanity. Whether you're just beginning to reflect on the spiritual side of your life or are a more experienced spiritual seeker, the school warmly welcomes you to join our group. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit esotericstudies.net. That's esotericstudies.net.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, I've been having a great conversation with Hugh McGill, who's been sharing with us how to transform a more traditional organization into a really an employee-focused organization that brings employees to life, allows them to learn to really solve problems at the root cause level, and creates a new culture of empowerment. So Hugh, I know we were just talking about some of the really practical, concrete ways that you are working with employees to start to help them understand how to move forward differently, what are some recommendations and words of wisdom that you'd really love to share with listeners, whether they're leaders in organizations or employees in organizations, what are some things that they can be thinking about if they want to make a similar change?
Well, as I said before, we were very fortunate to have leadership that was fully committed to the vision.
Mm-hmm.
And the leadership felt themselves, I think they held themselves accountable to be aligned with that, both in the way they behaved, the way they talked, the activities, the actions that they took within the group, was very much about that sort of, they knew where we were trying to go. And, you know, I guess sort of one of the things that you know, we were able to do was help really engage people in, okay, you can do something great every single day, but the moment you become a rogue, the moment you behave and it's not aligned with where we're trying to get to, we're going to spend another year trying to build it back up again. And I think we were very fortunate. We had good leader dialogues. We got all the leaders together to really talk about the vision, to really engage them in what their concerns were, addressing their concerns, and helping them be successful. I think from an emotional intelligence perspective, that was a critical aspect within the organization. I think our leaders were very aware about themselves, about who they were, and what effect their presence was going to have, you know, within a meeting, within a group, on a production line. If they were in a foul mood, they stayed away. They didn't feel that was going to add value, but very, very conscious about who they were and really caring about the teams that they worked for and worked with. You know, Goldman sort of argues that you need the sort of self-awareness, self-management, empathy become the core base for emotional intelligence. And you know, without that, all the rest is kind of suspect as to how strong it is. I thought the leaders in this organization really did a great job at really understanding themselves and what they needed to do. They created very strong relationships with the people they worked with. I think initially there was when you started seeing senior leadership out on the production floor in these work areas, people started getting nervous. Why are they here? What do they want?
Right. Yeah.
Did we do something wrong? But the more they did it, the more visible they were, the more they created relationships with other team members, really demonstrated, and you mentioned it before, respect and honesty for who the people were within that organization, within the organization, and again, the wisdom that they brought with them. No, it was very simple. I think they also were dealing with real-time information. They didn't let things sit. They didn't, it was funny, you know, when I left, one of the operators that I worked with over the years came to me and she said, you know, Q, you remember that time you came in on third shift to talk with, my facilitator and me about the team, about, you know, how I'm operating, the wisdom I've got, what partnership would help, that I was struggling, you know, with really being a good team player. I said, I remember that. Quite a few years ago, but I remember the time. She said to me, well, I want you to know that really made a difference. That really allowed me to bring much more clarity as to what I was doing in this organization. And it really made a difference. And it was exciting because 2 years later, she was put into a new role, which was great because she was a strong performer, but was just having difficulty with the new model. And she said to me, she said, I remember when you came here, you know, you got us all in the team in the room and you were talking about how we're going to learn the principles, how right from meeting and become a way of life, that we're going to be really continuous improvement thinking, you know, we're going to be making decisions, we're going to be empowered. And I think you even probably told us you teach us how to fly. And she said to me, we left that meeting and we looked at each other and we all rolled our eyes and said, who on earth is this guy?
Right. What is he talking about?
Right. And then she gave me a big hug and she said, you teach us how to fly. And what I said to her is, I didn't. I think the leadership in the organization established an environment of learning. That blame was no place for blame.
Mm-hmm.
That when problems existed, let's recognize them, let's solve them as problems, and come up with the right action so we can better serve the customer. And I think that the leadership within the organization just had a very clear purpose. This is what we're going to do in this organization. We're going to create an environment where we're going to get better, we're going to get better, we're going to get better. And we're going to do that through engaging our people in developing their skills and seeing the possibilities that exist. It's amazing. You know, when I reflect back on it, it was, you know, it makes the hair of my neck stand up. Mm-hmm. It was such an exciting time. It was seeing people within the organization with such confidence mm-hmm. about making decisions, making good decisions, but not falling out of process and not falling out of compliance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was really exciting to see.
Oh, it sounds like an incredible, incredible experience to have been part of. And as I was listening to you share just in the last few minutes, you know, the things I wrote down were leadership self-awareness, the leaders really caring about, you know, each other and the teams, strong relationships with everyone, having strong relationships with the people they worked with, addressing things in real time. So no, and you said no blame, right? We solve problems
right.
as they come up and stay in process and compliance. So it really, you know, when I know this isn't, these things aren't always easy, although when we hear them, they're simple. They're down to earth, right? They're doable.
They're doable. It takes time.
You've it got takes to time.
Be committed.
Yeah.
You've got to be committed to the journey. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. It's not going to, you know, people are not going to just all of a sudden go, oh, that's great. There's a lot of old history that mm-hmm. needs to be shaken off.
Yeah, it's a journey. It's, yeah, a lot of old history shaken off. Really well said. Hugh, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing this story and sharing your expertise and wisdom with all of the listeners. And
well,
I want to thank... go ahead.
I hope if people gain from it, that's wonderful.
But I'm sure that they did. Absolutely. And I want to thank all of you listeners for tuning into Cultural Brilliance Radio. As always, we had a great time. Please join me on the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. Later this month, I will be having another interesting conversation with Gary Barron, who is a pioneer in the evolution of organizations. Have a great week, and I'll see you here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.